If your brain is at full capacity with to-dos, birthdays, and dinner plans, meet Skylight Calendar. It syncs your entire family schedule onto a sleek digital display so you focus on important things like where you left your coffee. Right now, Skylight is offering our listeners $30 off their 15-inch calendars by going to skylightcal.com/talk. Go to skylightcal.com/talk for $30 off your 15-inch calendar. That's skylightcal.com/talk.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Take the Black Live, the one and only show on the internet. We talk about all things sci-fi, fantasy, movies, TV, books, resistances, wars in space, among the stars, you might say, houses, dragons, houses with dragons, ship battles, such things as this. I am Dan Selke, the editor of WinnersComing.net, here with Daniel Roman, the other editor of WinnersComing.net. How you doing today, Daniel?
I'm doing well. I'm excited to be here. I'm a little nervous about some of the stuff we're going to talk about because I'm not current, but we're going to forge into the waters of doing it anyway, because these are the things we do for love, as Jamie Lannister would say. Love of sci-fi fantasy. How are you, Dan? And how's everyone in the chat? Good to see you, Victor.
Victor, I don't really get it. The sequel to Andor, Bot Hand. I'm so stupid and attractive. Just something, these things slip my mind. Yeah, we are going to spoil Andor. I'm sorry in advance for you, Daniel. Probably a little later, but first.
Okay.
I mean, I'll do the best I can not. I don't see how we can not address some of the elephants in the room revealing some things.
Hasn't been out 24 hours.
Usually it would be a big ask for me to watch three episodes of TV in the same night when they drop, but I just found myself with some time, and then I couldn't stop. These ones got really good. But first, let's stop by Westeros, the Seven Kingdoms. I still don't get it. To check out what's happening with House of the Dragon.
Bothans are spies. That's the joke Victor's making from the original Star Wars movies.
Gotcha.
Many Bothan spies died to bring us this information.
I am not tutored in the Star Wars lore enough to understand the joke, and I apologize. But okay, first up, there is some rumblings in the House of the Dragon sphere. We know they're filming. We know they're making season 3. We know it's on the way. We know they're going to film a big old battle called the Battle of the Gullet, which was originally supposed to air at the end of season 2, but got pushed back because of all kinds of industry malarkey.
Indeed.
They're teasing it in a pretty big, pretty tall talking way recently. They seem to have a lot of confidence in this big opening action sequence that will basically follow up on all the armies and navies on the move at the end of season 2. We saw the Valyrian fleet leaving port after a season of puttering around. We saw the pirates of Essos, led by Shekhar Lohar. I'm not sure I'm getting that name right. Leaving
Shirako
with
Lohar.
The Greens, Shirako Lohar, right?
Yeah.
Played by a philosophy tube from YouTube. Those two navies are going to intersect. It's going to be huge. Never been a big sea battle in Game of Thrones before. Not anyone that you could compare to the other big battles they did. They're going to have one, and they are talking it up something fierce. Ryan Condal, the showrunner of House of the Dragon, has said that the Battle of the Gullet, which will probably come in the first episode of season 3, will probably be the most complex sequence that's ever been done for television, which I would kind of just let roll off my back if other people didn't seem to be saying the same sort of things. Steve Toussaint, who plays Corlys Velaryon, one of the people who will be involved in this, told Gold Derby, which is like an award site, not to give any spoilers, but I've spoken to Lonnie Peristere, one of our directors, and he said, what we're doing in this particular episode, we don't think it's ever been done on television before. We have production designer Jim Clay, who builds all the sets for the show, talking to, I think, also Gold Derby, saying that they have two episodes in season 3 that are going to push it even further than the Battle of Rook's Rest, the giant battle from season 2, where the three dragons met in the sky and they battled, and two of them went down. It was pretty epic and sweet and the highlight of the season. And finally, we had Ryan Condal sending back, yeah, we have two enormous, enormous sequences that both eclipse Rook's Rest that we're working on this year. First of all, good. I like ambition. I like when people aim high. I mean, with Game of Thrones and House of the Dragon, they've set the bar in terms of what an action scene can be on TV so high. I mean, like, trying to top it can almost, I don't know, be a danger. Like, if you try to aim so high, like, where is the bar? How high can it go? How much more impressive can it get? Maybe they'll try to answer that question.
Yeah, I think, you know, the gullet should be, so if you've read Fire and Blood, which obviously we both have, and I'm just assuming everyone who listens to our podcast probably has, Fire and Blood, the Battle of the Gullet is a huge naval battle. It's very important to the Dance of the Dragon Civil War. It's kind of one of those things where, like Rook's Rest, it's laid out so clearly in the book that it's like, all you have to do is not mess it up. Make it compelling and don't mess it up, because the sequence itself has so much drama just inherent in the way it's laid out. But, you know, it involves dragons, it involves ships and sailors. There is a land element too, because a place gets sacked, we will say, as part of this. The Battle of the Gullet is kind of this big multi-front sequence. It should be good. The most complex sequence that's ever been on TV. I know I kind of like side-eyed that the first time Ryan Condal said that, but it does seem like a lot of people are saying it. And, you know, there has never been a big naval battle sequence with dragons, really, unless we're counting things like Daenerys blowing up the Slaver's Bay fleet, which is going to probably be peanuts compared to whatever they do. So it should be good. I do worry a little bit about the one-upsmanship of we must have bigger and bigger sequences. Like, I know this is a thing Condal said in the defending against book adaptation changes emergency podcast that went up when George R. R. Martin first criticized the show last year. He talked about how he explained to George that basically when we go big, we have to go really big because it's Game of Thrones on television and people have those expectations. And I think the original Game of Thrones got into trouble when it really went down that rabbit hole mentality. Like, do you agree with that? I feel like that's when the focus kind of dropped a little bit.
Kind of, not really. I mean, it's not like it got into trouble because it was making big action scenes. I do think that if the story calls for a giant action scene, have a giant action scene. The story does call for the Battle of the Gullet.
True.
I think you could argue that, like in Game of Thrones, like remember that whole thing where they all went north of the wall and captured a white and there were like a lot of zombies? Like that seemed like maybe you didn't need to do that one. But generally speaking, no, I didn't have a problem with their big action scenes. Listen, you've watched the pirate show Black Sails 38,000 times.
I have.
How much would it take to top one of the naval battles on that show?
Well, the thing about Black Sails is they actually filmed it on ships in the ocean, most of it. So I don't think...
Good God.
I think that the way that they're going to top the whatever they're saying here is the marriage of different, I don't want to say mediums, disciplines, having the CGI dragons while filming a battle on ship sets. I don't know that they can top the Black Sails naval battles because, like I said, they were on actual ships. They were in broad daylight, which something a lot of shows like Game of Thrones did this. When it had, you know, that naval battle with Euron Greyjoy, they set it at night because that's just much easier to film in a believable way than a daytime ship battle in a studio. So, yeah, I mean, most of the Black Sails battles that were really good, a lot of times it was like boarding stuff. So like people boarding another ship and that being really intense and gritty and you never knew who was going to die. But this is presumably going to have lots of ships. I imagine it's going to be a much grander battle. Black Sails didn't really do like fleets on fleets.
That I mean, like, how really could they? Ship. That wasn't really their bag or what they would have been expected to do back then.
Yeah.
I have no problem with trying to top what came before, if topping what came before is what's necessary. And things on water are really tough to do. I'm looking forward to it. The other thing they say is interesting is that there are two sequences that kind of eclipse the Battle of Rook's Rest. And the other question is, what's the other one? Yeah. And I don't know, the more I hear about them talk about this, the more I think they'll probably end the season with the Battle of Tumbleton. Seems like where they're going, which is this land battle, thank God, where a couple of people betray a couple of other people, train their dragons on things they aren't supposed to. And we watch as the tragedy unfolds in written in fire and blood. It's not like the biggest sequence from the books, but I wonder if part of it is since the scheduling's gotten a little off now with the second season being cut off, they feel maybe that's the best option to do up and make big, even though I somehow don't think that would be the big dramatic ending if, I don't know, they had their full druthers and had four seasons of 10 episodes apiece.
I almost wonder if they're going to somehow make the second Battle of Tumbleton, because that one is a big moment.
Sure.
That is a huge gut punch with a lot of casualties of very important characters. You know, the timeline is a little muddled now, like you said, because season two got cut off. It ended earlier than they had planned. They're still only tentatively planned for four seasons. So it is a question of what big events will they cut? How will they manage to navigate it all? And if you had asked me a year or two ago what I expected the end of season three to be, I don't know that Tumbleton would have been my answer, but I do think I don't know what other option there is. Like, I don't think they're going to hit the God's Eye this season. That would be really weird, in my opinion, if the God's Eye happens as like the end of the season. But Tumbleton, I could see them doing something there. And it's the only thing that is comparable, I think, like to the Gullet in terms of like armies, dragons, battle. You know, the other thing that has been brought up when Ryan Condal has mentioned like big moments from the book being in this season is either the Butcher's Ball or the Fish Feed, which are two really ruthless battles that happen in the Riverlands with like very, very high casualty rates. They're very bloody and awful, depending on which side of the war you're rooting for. But those don't have dragons. They're just people. So I don't think there's any way that that's the other one he's talking about in this interview.
Yeah. I mean, man, it's hard to guess at this point.
Yeah.
We'll keep an eye on it and see what happens.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to say about Game of Thrones, House of the Dragon, and the Seven Kingdoms, yada, yada, yada?
I don't think so. I think those are the main things that we had to touch on. It's just these interviews. It's nice to see, you know, Condal and Steve Toussaint and Jim Clay out talking about the show. They are filming right now. So we'll have our ear to the ground for more updates on this. And I am certainly excited to see what they turn out.
Very cool. All right. Let's talk about Star Wars Andor. And Daniel, I apologize in advance.
Okay.
Here's my plan. I'm going to go ahead and talk about these episodes that I just watched in and I'll try not to spoil up until the point where it becomes unavoidable.
Okay.
At which point I will alert you, God, and everybody to, I don't know, cover your ears or maybe take one for the team. We'll see.
Let me ask you. I want to ask you something before you go into this, before you spoil what would be the best episode of television I'm going to watch this week, which I will take one for the team because that's just the kind of guy I am. We're going to do it. But you don't normally, when Disney says, here's a bunch of new episodes, fam, you don't normally dive right through them. That doesn't strike me as your style. So what is it that drew you through these three episodes? Did you watch them all last night when they dropped at, I assume, 8 p.m. your time?
I think
8 p.m. Watch them this morning?
I got home a little late, and I turned them on just kind of, usually what I've done with these is, listen, I do this technically for work.
Listen.
I enjoy Star Wars Andor, and it's been very good at points, but I'm watching these kind of so I can understand them and edit reviews, people who have watched the whole things more closely than I have. And I just put one on not in the background, but I put one on while I like kind of answered some emails and did other stuff. And then I had some time, so I watched the second one, and the second one got me to close everything. The second one was like, oh, okay, I should probably watch this.
Shit's
and then
real.
It was my bedtime, basically, but there was one more left, and I was like, I gotta know. So I just put the third one on, because by that point I was in it, and that one pulled me through to the end, and then I got to bed late, and now I'm groggy. But they were good enough to make me sit up and pay attention. They were very, very good. So Star Wars Andor, they're releasing them in these chunks of three every week, which I don't love, especially this time. Like these episodes, you could release these week by week, and we would have had enough talk about plenty. I don't know why they do it. I mean, I guess I kind of know. No, you know what? I don't know why they do it. I don't like it.
I think Tony Gilroy made the choice for this, right? Because each one is a block and then there's a year between.
Yeah.
So I made the creator
for season one. He also, they were all three episode blocks, like every single one. They weren't like year apart, but they were all like discrete story, and they all came out one in a week. I'm not sure if he said, "Oh, I want to come out three at once."
Yeah,
bullshit. Yeah, I don't believe it. But it can work. They do work, but they're all done in a month. That's now, anyway. These episodes. Really kind of pay off all the things that have been building up for the first six. Andor's a very slow, methodical show, which is part of the reason it hasn't always connected with me. Like you do have to sort of absorb all the detail if you want to get to the payoffs. When the payoffs come, damn, they come hard. Like last season, the prison arc where Cassian Andor is in prison was the highlight of the season. This is the equivalent of that, but it feels much grander and bigger and more epic. So basically, it's them on the planet Gorman.
Of course.
And Cyril.
How to get real on Gorman.
Cyril, my boy, is working there as an Imperial cog. His girlfriend, Deidre, is a higher ranking officer, and they have a weird thing going on. Cassian Andor, and I'm already going to spoil it, gets sent to Gorman to kind of, I don't remember why. To keep an eye on things, and we've been teased that they're going to have this Gorman massacre, some kind of event that will mark a real rupture in this building rebellion. Yeah. You know, some point where the Empire goes so far that you have no choice but to stand up and fight, some kind of atrocity. Now, okay, Andor has always been called the adult Star Wars show, Star Wars for grown-ups. The Star Wars show that will go further, hit harder than other Star Wars shows do, not just for kids. And it's pretty much lived up to that for better and for worse. I've talked before about how there's some weird things in Andor where even though they might be true to life and effective, like there's a sexual assault scene earlier this season, it doesn't really feel like Star Wars. Yeah. Like Star Wars is so family friendly that even if that is the right choice to include, it just doesn't quite feel right. Yeah. Okay, after these, that's still true, but who cares? Like, Star Wars should be this.
Okay. Star Wars should be this. It might be better. Okay. So, yeah. So the Gorman Massacre, there's a historical Gorman Massacre that happened already that the Gorman culture has kind of built around. And then there's what we've known is coming, which is that the Empire is essentially going to rupture the stability of the planet because they want the minerals in it. I assume that's what came to a head this week. And that
kind
it was
of sort of not really. It was
okay.
All of the people on Gorman who are resisting, who want the Empire gone, the protesters, they get kind of lured into a big city square by the Empire and then closed off. And then they just massacre them. And it was, there isn't much in the way of blood or guts or viscera, but the terror was still very primal.
Yeah.
The filmmaking was still very true to life and grounded and scary to watch. And on a level you just don't see in Star Wars. Like, you know, the first Star Wars movie, famously, they blow up the planet of Alderaan. Mm-hmm. And you get somebody saying, like, a kajillion voices crowded at once. And then we're suddenly silenced, which is like, okay, that's nice and mythic. But you don't really, you're out on the ground, you're seeing what that means to people.
Sure.
This you were. It was terrifying. There's a bit, And okay, I'm going to spoil the next bit because what really made it too, I'm going to, because it was so That's good. Fine. It was so good.
We're in it. You're talking so about it.
If anybody doesn't want to hear this, please leave. Cyril Karn, my favorite, is down there during it, and he's just gone through a disillusionment. Apparently, this is a step too far even for him. But and he and Cassian come face to face. They have an incredibly satisfying knocked out, drag out, like mano a mano, like banging your head into a table, tossing you into walls, like kind of digging at you with their nails and fingers battle. Very fun to watch. There's always energy when characters like come together who haven't been in the same scene, but around the same show, but kind of know about each other. And then finally, Cyril points a gun at Cassian's head. Cassian says, "Who are you?" Because he doesn't know who this person is. Even though Cyril's been obsessed with him for ages. Cyril like just has a mini existential crisis, got shot in the head by someone else and dies. Good. I've loved this character. He's such a kind of banality of evil sort of character. Like, he's not exactly an evil down to the core person like Deidre is, but he is this cog who believes in what this fascist empire is doing, kind of out of inertia, because he's born into it and that's what he believes, and he hasn't considered other things. Maybe in another world he could have been a better person, and the show doesn't give him a redemption arc, which I like. He was kind of this pitiful little pathetic person to the end, even though he's inching towards having some kind of crisis, some kind of existential what is it all about moment. It never kind of crosses over into redemption, which I think is kind of the cliche method to go with. It would have been to take this character and give him like a full-blown redemption arc, more heroic. Now, this stayed a lot more realistic and true to life, and I liked that. He was pitiful up until the very end, which is what I loved about him. I adored that. And also, okay, so then the next episode after that, and then I have a bigger point about it after all. Any questions so far? Any comments?
No. I've got no comments. You've spoiled Andor. I don't even need to watch it. Continue.
You do not. It was so good. It was so intense. And in intense in a way that I didn't really feel with the first six episodes, I'll be honest with you. This is benefiting from that buildup. And then in the next episode is more about Mon Mothma, the senator, played by Genevieve Riley, wonderfully played. Mm-hmm. Where they all take in the Gorman Massacre and they're all like, holy crap, they did this. This is really, really bad. And she decides to give this big speech in front of the Senate. And it's a pretty inspirational speech about, first, she listens to all these other alien senators kind of give speeches towing the party line where they're like, oh my God, the horrible Gorman usurpers, uprisers. How can we let it get this bad? Thank God not more people in the Empire were hurt. Kind of selling the massacre as a justifiable police action. And then she gives a very powerful speech about how the meaning of truth is being twisted and how the loss of an objective reality is a enormous crisis, an enormous problem, and that we need to say the truth. This was a, and they say the word genocide in Star Wars. Again, not something you really should hear in Star Wars. It was a genocide. You said it twice, just genocide twice. And says something like, in a world where truth doesn't matter, the loudest monster will get what he wants. The loudest monster is the Emperor, is coming for all of you. And then she flees with Cassian Andor and they meet. It was very exciting because it's kind of fun to have two characters meet, and they get off the planet. Okay, really effective. And there's no other way to say it. Very resonant, given what we're going through now. Mm-hmm. Look, there has been a rise of far right parties around the world. Here in the United States, we have a president, President Donald Trump. I don't want to get too far into this, but I don't see how you do it without doing it. I don't see any way to avoid it. Who's been called an aspiring autocrat, who has been accused over and over again of kind of devaluing the notion of truth. Remember alternative facts, that whole thing?
Unfortunately.
That's kind of been his whole raison d'etre. He's trying to get more and more power. He's disobeying high courts. It's a scary time. And to watch this reflected in a Star Wars show is, to use the cliche Gen Z phrase, not something I had on my 2025 bingo card, but it is something that they have committed to, and it feels bigger than it probably should, impactful and powerful. And by the way, the guy who made it, Tony Gilroy, and I believe him, he's saying he's not trying to connect with what's going on right today, this second. I mean, he made it a couple of years ago, so he couldn't have. He's more saying that, well, if you look at history, this kind of thing happens a lot, where autocrats, dictators will try to bend the truth to their whims to make it a matter of personal preference, not something objective. You'll try to gain power by kind of othering a group, which, I mean, it's happened over and over. World War II, it happened a lot. It happened in World War I. It's not like it's a new story. He wants it to be timeless, and it is. And in being timeless, it also resonates with this particular time, which is what we're going through. That's what I think is happening here.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. And I know that, like, so obviously the prequels were a much more family-friendly affair. They did. They toyed with some of these ideas. Like, it's not like this is invented just for Andor, right? Like, we saw the rise of Emperor Palpatine in the prequels, but they didn't have the very adult language and reckoning with these things that Andor maybe necessarily has. But that, you know, that doesn't feel as tonally off to me as like some of the things we've talked about earlier in the season, like the sexual assault scene.
Something
like
about this sexual assault always feels just, I don't know, like over some kind of line. I'm not sure if it's our own culture. I'm not sure if, even though I think Tony Gilroy talked about that too. He sounded like George R. R. Martin a little bit, where he was talking about, you look at history, kind of militarized sexual assault is a very big part of most wars in history. It felt wrong not to include it, but I agree with you. It does feel a little discordant in a way that even like a massacre in a town square doesn't. And I'm not sure what to quite put that up to.
Well, I think that is, you know, looking at Star Wars as a franchise going back, you know, 40, however many years, like there's been a lot of violence in Star Wars. The sexual violence is not something that it's ever really done. Tony Gilroy's not wrong. And I liked the way they did this in the show, where it's looking at, here are people without visas. Here are the things that Imperial officers are offering them to let them slip through the cracks. Like, those sorts of things felt very poignant and like they were handled well. It just, like you said, it feels discordant for the franchise we're in. If it was in another show, probably wouldn't have upset people, or I probably wouldn't think about it the same way I am now, where I'm like, I don't know if this quite fits the tone of Star Wars as we've known it. The Empire stuff, the speech before the Senate, the autocrat stuff that, like you said, feels very timely, but is in fact very timeless, because he's not, it's a little different than, like, say, one thing I started watching, which we'll bring up later, is Daredevil Born Again, which that has some very clear parallels to current events, like very obvious ones. And I haven't seen these episodes, but the seeds of that, like, this is what autocrats, this is what dictators do, feels true to the overall arc of Star Wars still, even if this is it without the kid gloves, essentially. So I'm excited to watch these episodes. I will still watch them, even though I know what's going to happen now, because I think it's worth sounds it. Like they were great. Let me ask you something about this, because one of my concerns, you kind of mentioned how the previous six episodes you liked, they didn't quite grab you by the throat the same way these did. And I kind of feel the same. I really enjoyed them. But after episode six, I found myself wondering, like, will this season have anything that even comes close to the prison arc?
The answer is yes.
You feel that this did.
Okay. More than
enough.
That's
exciting.
But I feel you. I feel that. And I wonder if it would have been different had Tony Gilroy gotten to make five full seasons like he originally wanted.
Yeah, totally.
I think part of it is a function of the show kind of we call things like, oh, it's a slow build. It simmers and then it boils a lot. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure we always say it correctly. This show is a slow build. This show yeah. is a simmer until it boils kind of thing. It boiled over here.
Cool.
This show truly is a, it's good to watch the entire thing to get perspective on it kind of show, which I don't think all shows that get called that really deserve the title. But this one yeah. does seem like a bigger than the sum of its parts kind of series. And I think these episodes prove it. They're wonderful. Cool. And
wonderful in a massacre genocide sort of way. But yeah,
I do think Cyril Karn is very different for Star Wars, too. Maybe it's why I don't feel like it's just me who really connected with him.
No, I
can't really put my finger on it. Like, Star Wars doesn't really do banality very much. You know, we're with the hero characters. We're with the ones who matter. We're with the little green backwards talking space psychics. And we're with the giant roaring Chewbacca dogmen. And we're with the dashing Han Solo and the Destiny Laddin, Leia and Luke. Cyril was fun because he was just this everyman. And he was bitter and he was stunted and he collects toys. Yes, something felt more real about him. Everyone around him like stood taller than him. Deidre is more of like a classic villain. Like she is a cold as ice imperial agent who will stop at nothing to see her goals met. She has some great moments in these latest ones. Where we see a little more humanity in her, but I'm glad to report she does not give in to her humanity. Like she struggles with it, but classic to Deidre form, she pulls through and is like, no, I will be a monster, even though she questions it for a second, which,
man,
God bless her.
That's exciting. Deidre, I love Deidre. She, I don't know if we've talked about this. She played Yennefer in the Witcher video game. That actress. She's incredible. So I'm excited for some good Deidre in these episodes. And Cyril, I saw there's an interview going around with Tony Gilroy over at Decider today, where he talked about how he views Cyril as like an absolute victim in every way. And it is like, it's interesting because like you mentioned, like Deidre is more of a classic villain in the more recognizable way. And Cyril is like the pencil pusher, like, you know, base level cog of the Empire who we never, like you said, we never really follow. I think he's been one of the more, you know, Andor's got a lot of interesting characters, but he's one where I always am excited to see him when he shows up. And it's funny because a lot of his stuff is not like, he's not a swashbuckling rogue. Like he's not doing exciting stuff, but he's just so damn interesting. So yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to watching these.
And it's kind of the heart of the show to me. And I'm not sure what the final show is going to be like without him. I'm going to miss him.
Yeah. Exciting. Yeah. So yeah, there's one more block of Andor episodes next week.
The whole thing's over.
Next week, I'll have to stay up late and watch them so that we don't have a repeat of this spoiler trauma for me. But for everyone out there.
Yeah.
You will. You're going to watch him. You did. You won't fool me twice, Dan. But for everyone watching, you should know that you should enjoy this talk about Andor if you've seen the episodes and get caught up real quick for next week, because I'm sure we'll be talking about it next week, too.
Cool. What else are you watching, Daniel? Anything in your queue these days?
Yeah, I feel like I've been watching a lot. So, I started Daredevil Born Again, which has been pretty good so far. I'm like two episodes in. It's nice to watch a Marvel show that feels like a television show again, because this doesn't feel like a multi-episode movie. Like it actually feels episodic in the way a TV show would. So yeah, I'm enjoying it more than I expected to. I've just been so jaded and burnt out on Marvel that I've been like, meh. But Daredevil Born Again has been pretty fun.
Yeah, I liked it. It does yo-yo wildly in quality. I watched a video or put on the background about it. Apparently, there are episodes that kind of were shot entirely with the new strategy in mind, and episodes that very much were relics of the old way they were doing it, yes, when it was a little more family friendly and forward facing. And you can sort of tell, but the ones that hit pretty well.
Yeah, totally. I'm glad that Disney already renewed this for a second season, because yeah, Daredevil had a lot of behind the scenes stuff happen, you know, during, I think it was the strikes, they had to pause, and then Kevin Feige and the other powers that be reviewed what they had and were like, oh, this is bad, this is not working. And they brought in a new showrunner and they retooled the series to be more adults. They broke a lot of bones, of fake bones of real actors, but fake bones, to make the show grittier and all this sort of stuff. And it seems like it has worked out, but I'm hopeful, but stands to reason that it will be more consistent in the second season, because they did find their footing, it sounds like. But you can see it in season one, season four, whatever we want to call it, that they needed to find their footing and they were trying to figure it out. So I'm glad that they did.
And like you said,
eventually get there.
Me too. And like you said, another show that's very much resonating with our time, but in a more obvious way, where kind of Andor is kind of trying to make this timeless tale of the rise of fascism. I think Daredevil's a little more pointed. Daredevil just hates Trump. I'm just going to say it. Daredevil is very obviously an anti-Trump show. The Kingpin is Trump. He's doing bad things. And the parallels are impossible to miss, even if you try. They're written in there.
They've got hats that say Fisk will fix it. So, yes, it is impossible to miss the parallels, even though Vincent D'Onofrio is a lot scarier than the real world politician we've been talking about.
See, that's what's so interesting about this. I don't want to like get torpedoed or banned or something, but Trump is doing things that are very scary, because I thought about this when I was watching Daredevil. Okay. I was like, so, okay, they're clearly coding the Kingpin as Trump. They're having him do the things Trump does, step over the line, you know, go beyond the law, take justice into his own hands in a kind of brutal way. But he's so much cooler than Trump is. Like, he's so much kind of more menacing, which I think might, like, I mean, they have another choice, but like, it kind of misses the point almost. Part of the phenomenon of Trump is that he does all these things, but he also kind of seems like a doofus. And it makes for like a very disorienting approach.
Yeah, that is definitely fair. Wilson Fisk does not ever come off like a doofus. So yeah, it is interesting seeing, you know, this take on this sort of system, but with a character who is at once more and less believable than what we're actually seeing in the real world. Would people be behind him the same way that they're behind the risk of being torpedoed, whatever, the stupidity that we watch on the regular? Who can say?
We'll see what happens when for a second season. I know it's scary.
So the other thing I've been watching, I've been enjoying that. I'm going to keep watching it for sure. The Last of Us is on.
It is.
The fourth episode, right?
Yeah.
Just came
halfway
out.
Through.
I've been really bad about watching it weekly because I binge watched the whole season ahead of time.
Sure.
And that doesn't always throw me off, but this time it has kind of thrown me off a little bit. But I liked the fourth episode. I feel like it's another one where a lot happens, right? This is the one where Dina found out about Ellie being immune. So that was all very exciting. I've been enjoying The Last of Us season two. I almost feel like, well, one, I wish it was longer, but two, there are like some elements from the games that's doing better and some it's doing less well. So it's been interesting. I love a good adaptation study, and I feel like this season has been good for that. Are you still into it?
Yeah. I mean, I don't have your problem about, I binged it mostly beforehand and I'm still good.
Fair.
Yeah, yeah, I love it. And I'm not as attached to the game as you are, so I guess I guess I let the changes such as they are, if they are, just roll with them. I don't remember it well enough to get mad about the changes, you know?
That's fair. I got on a huge kick when the first season of The Last of Us came out, and I played the first game, mm-hmm. then I watched the show, then I played the second game. And yeah, there are, I think the game is, you know, they had 30 or 40 hours to tell this story versus we've got 7 episodes this season. Next season will presumably be a little bit bigger. And then probably a fourth season to wrap it all up. They can't string things along quite the same way. So there are some things they're saying very blatantly that the game is really subtle about. And that bugs me a little, but it's, I can't decide if I should actually be upset about it or if it was the only choice they had. Like I wrote about this on the site this week. Yeah. Abby's backstory is one of those, like they front loaded Abby's backstory. They told it right at the start of the season. The mm-hmm. game, you don't really find out who Abby is until you see Abby's point of view halfway through. So it changes the story a little bit, but I don't know, like jury's out until we see this season and next season on if it was for better or for worse, I think.
Yeah, I don't really have a really strong opinion on it. I thought it was effective. And I do think you're right. It's going to be kind of thing we might not be able to really assess completely.
Yeah.
Until the whole thing is over. Also, I don't have as good enough memory of the game to remember how I felt about it at the time. So
fair. There's some instances of it being better, I think, with being less subtle. So like this episode is the one where Ellie shoves her arm in the infected's mouth mm-hmm. when it tries to bite Dina. And that's how Dina finds out she's immune. There's a whole dramatic thing where Dina almost shoots her. The game is like,
that was good.
I like that. That was a really great way that the show navigated that scene. And it's better than what's in the game, which is at the beginning of the game, Ellie tells Dina, I'm immune. And Dina's like, you're a dick. That's obviously a lie. Ha, ha, ha. Mm-hmm. We're high. And I don't believe
it. I recall that. Yeah.
And then later in the game, around this exact point in the story, so in the game, they get infected with spores. They breathe them in. They have to wear gas masks so that they don't breathe them. Ellie's gas mask breaks in a tunnel. Dina's like, oh my God, you're going to die. And she's like, I'm not coughing. Look at me. I'm fine. Let's run. I'm immune. There's no standoff. The drama is much less. It's not a sacrifice. Like here, Ellie gives up her secret to save Dina's life. So there are all those things there. I think that's a good example of like, oh, that's working even better. Really enjoying this season. I agree with what Robert said that it's doing better this season with the hordes, with the infected. I do think this season is, they heard the fans who were like, there weren't enough infected in season one. Like no one's going to have that complaint this season. I think
I'm surprised how close they're staying like to the parts of the game you play. Yes. Like yeah. I remember that subway thing. Yeah. I remember running through that. I remember the red lights.
Yes.
I remember going to that communications tower or whatever and finding yep. the bodies hanging from the screen. Like obviously the guy who made the game is making the show too. So it makes sense. I so far as I can tell, I think they're staying closer than I would have expected to
that,
the game.
Yeah, that's my opinion too. I was pleasantly surprised by how faithful to the game it is, even though they're adding things, they're fleshing some things out. Isaac, seeing Isaac's backstory is a thing.
That's good.
Yeah, we don't ever see Isaac's POV in the game, so you don't get any of that. You get it in like little notes that are around Seattle. But yeah, I think I am surprised at how faithful they are staying. Even like, you know, I think it was last week when they find the tank, or was that this week? They find the tank in the street, Ellie slams the door on it, and they're like, I guess no one's here. Like, oh, yeah. that's from the game, that tank. So like, there are all sorts of things like that. You wrote an article about this, I think, today about being surprised about the timelines because we haven't really seen Abby again and we're getting deeper and deeper into the season.
Which means we're probably not going to, is my guess, how they're going to handle it until like the very end.
Yeah, which means it seems more and more likely that they are following the very unusual structure of the video game.
Yeah,
which I didn't expect that. And I like that. Like, make the bold choice. Please do that. That's part of why the game worked so well, even though it incensed the mob to be awful about it. So yeah,
only again, the mob is way less. Like, yes, I have noticed the backlash is here, and it's kind of the same backlash they had in the original game, but it is like from a 10 to a 4. Like, yes, it's there, but it's just toned down. And the love is a lot more abundant and visible. It's just, yes, not nearly as bad as it was, which of course it's not, because we've had time to digest. Everybody knows it's coming. So there's a surprise element. It makes sense to me.
Yeah.
But it is there, but it's like just way,
way less. This feels like a normal amount of backlash or people not liking a thing versus when the game came out, it was almost a Game of Thrones level of backlash in terms of how legendary, ooh, it is in that industry and in the games industry.
Yeah.
Except time vindicated in a way that I don't think it's going to vindicate season 8 of Thrones, where looking back now, a lot of people are like, actually, that game was incredible. You know, which it is. I you're right. I do. I really love The Last of Us Part 2. I think it's like, yeah, just a masterpiece of video game making.
Robert, maybe we're getting here this next episode. Maybe we're not. Who can say? We can. We've seen it, but we won't tell you.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. So we'll have to keep watching.
You will.
Yes. Yes. The other things I want to touch on, because we're running low on time. Somehow we always have enough to talk about. I read the first Murderbot book, because the show's out next week. That was really fun. I enjoyed it a lot, and I highly recommend it. For people who want like a kind of wry sci-fi, it's about this. It's a security construct, so it's like half robot and half human that hacks its own system so that it has free will, but it doesn't know what to do with it, and it can't let anyone find out. So it watches cheesy soap operas and searches for meaning in media, like any of us would. And it's just a lot of fun. So yeah, first book was great. I will be reading more of them. The other thing that has been eating my time this week specifically, I started playing this video game called Clair Obscur Expedition 33. Mm-hmm. Have you heard of this game, Dan?
A lot of people are talking about it, but I have not played it myself.
Yes, yes. It's excellent. It's basically like a JRPG style game. So like think like Final Fantasy, turn-based game. And it's a French studio that made it. It is like a lower budget game than a lot of the big games that are being made right now, but the quality of it is incredible. Charlie Cox, our Daredevil, is the voice of one of the main characters. His name is Gustav. So yeah, they have really good voice acting. The story, I hit a point in the story last night that made me gasp that I would compare to Game of Thrones if I did not want to spoil things for people. It was very, very good and shocking. So yeah, it's a beautiful, beautiful game. Like, I cannot recommend this thing enough. So that this is another instance where the hype is real and worth it. I saw even the French president congratulating the team of this game on the success they're having, because it's like, I think it's like the highest rated game of ever for PlayStation on Metacritic. Like, it's getting all sorts of accolades. It's sold millions of copies already. So yeah, it's making a lot of buzz right now. Definitely worth checking out if you need a new RPG in your life.
All right, I'll be honest, you're making a pretty good sales pitch. I'll think about it.
Excellent. Have you been watching anything else? Is it time for the lightning round?
I think it is. Why don't we do the Wick News lightning round, where we go through a bunch of stories we couldn't talk about the main body of the episode because we didn't have time, and give our 20-second opinions on no more, no less.
Sounds good.
Might even add a couple. There's so much going on. All right.
There is.
Why don't you go ahead and ask me first?
All right. Yeah, I want to know what the deal is with this. Apparently, Jeremy Renner turned down doing a season 2 of Hawkeye because Disney offered him half the pay of season 1.
Yes, he did. That's what he said. That's pretty funny.
Oh, wow.
You're talking about, you know, being better than a Marvel. It seems like they might be bumping back up between Daredevil and Thunderbolts, too. It's getting a lot of good press and good success. I was even seeing it. As for Hawkeye, I mean, yeah, why would you do it if they offer you half the money?
Yeah, totally. That's not a promotion, Disney.
You're Disney. Okay, Daniel, according to rumor, A24, a rather famous movie studio, is making a movie based on the video game Elden Ring, with Civil War director Alex Garland directing, according to rumor.
Yes. So this story broke yesterday. The site that exclusively, that's in air quotes for the audio listeners, who broke it, immediately took their story down. Another outlet confirmed that A24 is supposedly making it. Treat it with a grain of salt. But we do know that there are rumbles about an Elden Ring movie. So maybe it is happening. Maybe it will happen. I would watch it when it does. All right, Dan, here's some Orville for you. Our sci-fi show, The Orville, that we really liked, that has not had any updates in a long, long time. Adrian Palicki, that's Kelly Grayson from The Orville, says hopes for a fourth season of the series, and this is a quote, just went away.
Yeah, they've been back and forth about whether they're going to make a fourth season of that show for a while, and now we're back with more fourth.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going to happen. Someone says we're going to do it. We're going to shoot this month. Someone says, no, it's just kind of not happening. Probably isn't happening. But we'll always have the first three seasons in the memories.
Yeah.
Daniel, yes. The director of Sinners, Ryan Coogler, and Black Panther is rebooting the beloved 90s sci-fi show, The X-Files, even talking with Gillian Anderson, who plays Dana Scully, the skeptic lady.
Yeah, so Ryan Coogler definitely rebooting The X-Files. He confirmed on a podcast that that is the next thing he's working on now that Sinners is out. He's had conversations with Gillian Anderson. She confirmed this has happened, so they both said this. She's not really keen on coming back, but leaving the door open, she said Coogler is, quote, the perfect person to do this series. Excited to see what he makes.
Yeah.
This is a cool one for the Outlander fans. So Outlander author Diana Gabaldon revealed the title for the 10th and final book in the Outlander series, which is A Blessing for a Warrior Going Out.
Yeah, I don't read Outlander. I don't watch Outlander. But I'm happy that the people who've been reading Outlander for all these years will get the final book in the series. Must be nice.
That's fair. Yeah, no, that's real fair. It's funny too, because like, have you seen any interviews with her? I'm just going to interrupt us for 2 seconds to talk about Diana Gabaldon.
Not really. Occasionally, I think that she posted it in like a Facebook message. Like
she it wasn't an interview. She very much sounds like a female George R. R. Martin, like, and they're friends, like in real life, yeah, like in the way that she talks about how she works and like the meticulous research she does and stuff. She's got a way of speaking that's like a little bit reminiscent. So yeah, must be nice. Happy for you, Outlander fans.
Yeah.
What's next?
Daniel, a favorite of yours, Silo, the Apple TV Plus sci-fi show, has wrapped filming on its third season already.
Season two
is not even out. Oh, wait. Yes, it is.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, season two aired. It wrapped up at the end of January. Season three is already done filming. They started filming it before the initial green light announcement even happened in December, because Silo's just on top of it. They're filming seasons three and four back to back. So presumably they're just going to keep filming right now. But we know that season three wrapped. It's exciting. We'll probably watch it like later this year or early next year. Love it.
Very cool.
Yeah. All right, Dan, this is a cool one. Another thing we will certainly be watching this year at some point is Avatar Fire and Ash, the third in James Cameron's sci-fi series. The first official still from the movie just dropped, and it is Neytiri raging in this first official pic.
Zoe Saldana with a layer of makeup and another layer of CGI added on top of her. She's 8 feet tall in this world, blue, and has a bow. Avatar Fire and Ash, I know you're a bigger fan than I am. I'll probably watch the movie. It's coming. That's what it looks like. And that's good for the box office industry. Beautiful.
Yes.
Daniel, I'm going to add one in right here because we just added one for fun that we should touch on. There's a third season of Foundation coming to Apple TV Plus.
Oh, yeah.
Coming out July 11th. New trailer dropped today. Are you into the Foundation?
I'm mildly into the Foundation. So this is one, my wife watched it. I've seen parts of it. I've seen some parts that looked really lame and some parts that were surprisingly cool. The finale of season two, I thought was like actually great. I liked it a lot. So yeah, I'm cautiously intrigued that Foundation's getting another season. Euron Greyjoy's the villain. Mm-hmm. I'll always watch more Euron Greyjoy being Euron Greyjoy in space. But yeah, July 11th, the day Murderbot airs its finale. Also, I went way over the buzzer. Let me earn back a little bit of honor by asking you a last lightning round question here, Dan. So Percy Jackson and the Olympians is apparently moving early on season three. What does that mean? What's going on there?
So I think they're either filming or done with them in season two, and now they're going to do the thing where they plan season three well ahead of time, get filming on it probably before season two even airs, which means they're trying to get these things out in a timely manner, which is what shows should be doing. Those nerds at Apple seem to be kind of getting good at this.
Yeah.
And I hope folks at Prime Video get on this and start shooting more Wheel of Time sooner rather than later. I think that's how we will end. Everybody, thanks for watching Take the Black. We're here every Wednesday at 2 p.m. CFT here on the Winter is Coming Facebook page and the Winter is Coming YouTube channel. That's 3 p.m. on the East Coast, 1 p.m. in the mountains, and noon in California. Also, check out our website, winterscoming.net, winterscoming.com. Check us out in podcast form wherever podcasts are available. Leave a like, leave a comment, leave a subscribe, and just be the awesome people that you are. Thanks so much. Rip Cyril, and see you next time.
All right, take care, all.
This podcast is brought to you by FanSided. Join our community of over 300 sites from sports to pop culture and everything in between.